You got to be in a position to share the gospel with somebody who doesn't know it. You really need to start praying to have a heart for them. I mean, really, just to have an empathetic heart for them. Stop praying for all the things you need. Pray for somebody else's salvation.
Welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim, two pastors discussing practical details about life, leadership, parenting, and being more centered around Jesus first. The goal of this show is to help you keep your eyes on Jesus through the busyness of life and clutter of your schedules. Now, join us for the conversation.
Hey, welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim. Thank you so much for joining us. We are really excited about our episode today. I say excited because that's what, as a pastor, it's what you're supposed to say. You're excited.
Constant state of excitement.
We're excited about what God's doing, what God has done, what God is going to do. This is what we do. We're excited. And we want everybody else to get excited too. But enough about me. Tim, give us an update. How are you? What's going on in your life, man?
I'm good. We're in an awesome stage of just ministry, and things are exciting, for lack of a better word. And we just had our annual picnic last Sunday, and we had over 500 people. It was probably closer to 600 people. Last year's picnic was like 350, so quite a big growth on that.
A lot of growth, yeah.
And we just bought 50 more church chairs for the sanctuary, which were quickly absorbed into the Sunday morning. And so it's a cool place where you always like to see growth, but also I'm cautiously going before, you know, our leadership and just saying, okay, growth is good. More people hear about Jesus. We don't want that to be the goal so much that we lose our identity. And, you know, what brought us to this point right now, which I've talked about before, is the foundation of prayer, having response time at the end of service, being more Holy Spirit driven. And so if that's what's bringing people into the church, we don't want to get to a point where, okay, let's add a service, let's take away these parts just because it can serve more people. We're going to lose the identity that we're building right now. And so I think it's a word of caution just for anybody who's trying to grow and trying to go viral, either for your personal thing or try to sell an extra book or whatever it is. You know, that's not necessarily bad, but also you have to go take that before God and say, you know, God, is this what you want right now? And if it comes, help me be ready. Help me not to, because with an increase in whatever it is, will come an increase in either, you know, spiritual warfare, attacks. It'll come an increase in your own accountability. Like, I'm not ready for this. My family's not ready for this. And so anyway, it's an exciting time, but also like, just let's cautiously go take each step forward, each day forward. So
yeah,
that's where we're at. What's going on with you?
You know, much of the same. You know, we're growing, which is great. We want to make sure it's sustainable growth, right? And keeping our identity. Speaking of identity, we're in a place where we're recognizing that, you know, who the church has been for the last 15 years is very different now, comparatively. And because of that, we're entering into a rebranding and a refocus when it comes to vision. And that's very fun, right? For a creative, it's very fun. It's very exciting. At the same time, there's some pressure and stress around like releasing a vision and an idea that's pretty vulnerable that you've been kind of holding on to and our elders have been holding on to, and you're releasing it out to the congregation that of course they've contributed to, but still like, you know, you're going to get reactions. And so we're praying through it and really hoping that the way that we're guiding our congregation, we know that it's in line with where God's taking us. We're just praying that we can communicate that clearly and that it's received well. So we're trying to do everything we can to make sure we check all the boxes and make sure it's received as good as can possibly be, and that we give people an opportunity to ask questions. And the reason we're doing that is because here we are at Easter, here we are at like all the, and we've got some other new initiatives that we're doing because we're finally at a point as a church where we've got Sunday mornings not figured out from the standpoint of they're perfect, but figured out from the standpoint of we know who we are and what we're trying to accomplish. And now that we know that, and now that we're able to receive people, care for people, adequately follow up with people, now we want to start letting the community know, hey, please, like, come to church. This would be a great place. But we've done very little marketing up to this point because we've been trying to get our systems and stuff like really in place. So now we're moving forward and we know that we'll do some things well. We'll do other things that, you know, we didn't think of, and balls are going to get dropped and we'll fix that when it comes. But it's an exciting time of a lot of new things. And yeah. I think that, along with the growth that we're seeing and the expectation and the hope that's growing in our congregation, I think it's going to be a really great combination that's going to lead to many blessings and many early mornings and late nights. So that's that's kind of how it goes. But yeah, it's good to hear about your church. It's, you know, it seems like every pastor that's in my circle right now, with maybe a couple exceptions, their church is really growing. You know, we've got a friend that just launched a church. First time, first Sunday, this past Sunday, 49 salvations, over 500 people. It's incredible. Got another pastor there looking for land. Our church is looking for land. Your church just dropped to 2 services, but now you are buying 50 more chairs. Like, it's unreal, man. So it's really great to see people are really starting to lean in, and we're starting to see more and more the Christians, the followers, the believers, the people that grew up in church that maybe have stepped away since COVID and that kind of thing. They're starting to come back. They're starting to re-engage. Now, that's really great. We love when Christians are at church. That's pretty biblical there. And we love when believers are tied into a body of believers. That's also biblical. But then the question pops up, all right, well, what do we do? You know, what do we do when it comes to non-believers? And that's what we want to talk about today is, you know, how do we take the ownership of having friends that are non-believers? How do we take on the ownership of reaching out to non-believers? How do we live a Christian life and have a Christian walk, but also still have non-believers in our lives that we're tied to, that we're believing for and praying for and hoping to maybe one day see them become believers? Like, how do we do that? How do we manage that? So Tim, walk us through a little bit of what that looks like. I know we've talked about it in a lot of different facets and angles, but ultimately today we want to cover like the believer having the friend that's a non-believer. What does that look like, and why should that be a priority for us?
Yeah, it's a priority in a lot of ways. I mean, it's the Great Commission, to make it the shortest answer ever, but also the fact that, you know, our churches are often filled with people that look like us and sound like us, and we create these buckets of just comfortable things. You know, just heard a podcast on Carrie Newhoff of saying that this is like, the church is often a place we go to escape culture instead of inviting the culture in and saying, this is why you need to do it differently.
Right.
And so, you know, I understand that in both sides of it, but also the fact that, you know, when Paul's addressing the church, he's saying, if an unbeliever comes to your gathering, he's talking about order and gifts and basically don't freak him out. But the gathering was for the believers.
Right.
The gathering was primarily for teaching, edification, so that, not that you could just sit and do nothing, so that you could go out.
Right.
And we've kind of twisted it where, you know, I'm going to come and get filled up so that I can survive the world, right? So that I can just get to next Sunday. And it's such a twisted mentality of, why am I hearing a sermon? What is it doing? Am I just checking off a box that it's a part of Sunday morning procession and then I do nothing with it? Or am I actually getting equipped? Am I getting prayer so that I can face something, but also do it with Christ in me to overcome the world, because he's overcome the world? So, you know, with that, a lot of times the unbelievers, you know, you have the stories of the unbelievers that come in that smell like smoke or that are sinning and then just get ridiculed by the church the moment they walk in. And all of a sudden you have someone who's never going to come back to church again because you lost your chance. And so when you befriend an unbeliever, and when we talked about this topic, I thought about this. What does it mean to befriend an unbeliever? What does it mean to be a friend to someone who doesn't believe in Jesus? And the thought just was like, well, do you know how to be a friend? Right? Do you know how to be a friend, period, to anybody? Because if you're just looking at it as like a charity case, like I need to befriend this poor soul that needs to know Jesus, you're not a friend. It's a mission. Like they're now a mission that you're trying to, I need to save them. And I think the difference is that when you see someone as a friend, you'll be a friend with no strings attached, right?
Right.
Obviously a friend won't walk over you. They won't take advantage of you. They won't make you do things you don't want to do. They're not being a friend to you. And so you don't have to be a friend to somebody who's not being a friend to you. That's where we get hung up on and, you know, are in relationships that are bad for us.
Sure.
But if it's a mutual thing and someone's a friend, you're a friend to them, then there's no expectation that you have to believe exactly what I believe. Now, with that said, how do we start to show that person, you know, who's Christ to us, why they need Christ, without being so heavy-handed that we destroy the relationship.
Yeah, and it's such a challenge because the opinions of culture are so polarizing. And the opinions of your politics are so polarizing. And where you stand on different things can shut someone down so quickly. So I think the key, if we're going to have friendships with non-believers, is, like you said, to like legitimately be a friend, not to look at it as a, you know, some kind of like charity case, and not to look at it as some secondhand thing, but to really value the human being. Like, they're not a Christian, but they're still made by God. So let's remember that our approach to that relationship is not to beat them over the head with the gospel, but our approach to that relationship should be, because I'm your friend, I'm going to rub off on you.
Mm-hmm.
How I live my life, it will be different than yours, but you're going to see that for yourself. I shouldn't have to tell you a whole lot. If you ask questions, certainly I'll tell you. And if the moment presents itself, and I've been asking in prayer that God would present a moment, well, then certainly I'm going to share with you my perspective. I might even share with you the gospel if it's, you know, available to present in a moment. But, you know, we've got to enter into a relationship with understanding, with grace, and recognizing that, you know, if they don't know Jesus, they're not holding themselves to the same standards that you are. And if they don't know Jesus, they're not holding themselves to certain practices or certain disciplines in their life that you would be. So don't judge them for that, but allow them to see your disciplines. Allow them to see your habits. Now, I will say this. I even personally have been in positions where I've hung out with somebody that is a non-believer, and I've recognized that I have started having them rub off on me.
Mm-hmm.
I've recognized that I've started behaving more like them because I like them. They remind me of who I used to be. They put me in environments that I used to be in, and my habits haven't really died in those environments. I just stopped going to those environments altogether. And when you recognize that, Christian, when you recognize that, you need to, that's where you flee. That's where you need to get out of that scenario. And that's just you being smart and you protecting yourself. But overall, if you're in a relationship where, you know, you're just wanting to friend somebody, they're your friend, you're their friend, like, you're wanting your life to rub off on them in hopes that one day, doesn't have to be today, but in hopes that in God's timing, that one day they would come to know Jesus. And if that happens through you, great. If that happens just because they know you and they go to a different church one day and that happens, or they meet somebody else and that happens, like, hey, that's a win, right? So I think we've got to have more and more of this in our life. It's one of the things that I love about the gym that I go to. I have so many people there that don't know Jesus. And so I know the guy that battles suicide and doesn't know Jesus. I know the guy whose daughter just got hurt playing soccer and doesn't know Jesus. I know the family that just got a divorce that doesn't know Jesus. And I know the guy who's currently what appears to be cheating on his wife at the gym with another woman and claims to know Jesus. You know, I mean, I know there's all these in-betweens, right?
Yeah.
And so you've just got like all these different things that are happening. And it's important not to go in there with some, you know, stick and start hitting everybody over the head with the gospel. But it is important for you to go have those conversations and be the light in the darkness and be the beacon of hope. So yeah, we've got to put a priority on having non-believers, having unbelievers, having people that don't know Jesus. We have to have a priority in having those people in our lives because, like you said, that's the Great Commission.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do. We're here to bring people to Jesus.
Exactly. And the term friend has been just diluted because of social media, right? I mean, we have hundreds of friends. We have thousands of friends, according to Facebook. But an actual friend is hard to find. And the older you get, I mean, it was a lot easier to have friends in high school, right? I mean, you're like, we'll be friends forever. And then all of a sudden college hits and you're like, yeah, we'll be friends forever with these college friends. And you're like, ah, yeah. Life hits.
They have kids.
And, And you got kids.
Yeah.
And then you have no friends, or if you have friends, then those friends definitely have kids, because you're in the phase of life where we have to relate to the different things we're involved in. And so it's hard to have close friends. And we're not saying like you have to have 12 friends that are unbelievers, right? We're not saying that. It's really going before God and say, who's God called you to be a part of someone's life for? It's frustrating when, you know, you have someone who you thought was a friend and you're the only person that ever reaches out to them, right? At that point, you know, you're just checking up on them. Like you're just checking up, you're checking in, you might give them some wisdom, might listen to them. But if they never reach back out to you, that's a sign that, yeah, you're not really a friend. You're an acquaintance. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Jesus ate with tax collectors. He wasn't their friends. They weren't on the journey with him, you know, learning all the stuff, right? Like Jesus found his way into sinners' lives, but they weren't his close friends, because what you see in John 15:15, as Jesus is, you know, leaving, talking about unity, he tells his disciples, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. And so Jesus could have called his disciples anything at that point, right? You're no longer servants. Now you're disciples. Now you're Christians. Now you're anything. No, he said, I've called you friends, because you know what I know now. Now you can go and do what I'm doing, because they spent 3 years with him.
Right.
And so I look at almost like a friend, like just not a disciple because you're not the master, but like it's almost on that level of like we're doing life together. We're in each other's business, where you're hurt. I feel your hurt and I feel your joy. And it's that mutuality that I think is oftentimes when we just say the surface level friend, we have to do all this stuff. No, you really don't. There are levels to this. There's phases of life. Like we said, with kids, you're in different hobbies and different activities, and you'll surround yourself with people that have similar interests. That's just normal. And I think the difference with what we're talking about is, how do you have that deep level friendship with someone who's not a Christian? And then how do you just have that casual check-in, that once a month, hey, let's grab coffee with someone who's not a Christian as well? Those two things will look differently. With the deeper level thing, you do have to be careful, because if they're involved in things, like you said, past things you used to be involved in, or watching things they're not supposed to, and then there's no way they can't either talk about it, invite you to things, and then you start feeling like being left out if all the group's doing it and you're not. And so we have to be, you know, set apart. We have to be holy. We also have to put boundaries in place and know when the time is that, okay, this person can't be a close friend right now. They have to be someone that I don't hate them. I'm not going to, you know, call them a sinner. I'm not going to bemoan all the stuff they're doing. I just can't be involved in it right now for my own relationship with God.
Yeah. And even Jesus made the distinction of who his friends were. And then even within his disciples, like he had Peter, James, and John that he took a little further than everybody else.
Right.
Like he even within his friend group had a smaller circle that he was even more vulnerable with. So it's important for us to look at that, think through that, figure out in our life who those people are. I mean, even for me, like, I've tried to get really specific with that, even to the point that I know who I call when I have good news, and I know who I call when I have bad news, and I know who I call when I need to hear an idea, and I know who I call when I need to share an idea. Like, I just know who those people are. There are some people in your life that you do not call when you have bad news, because they're going to like triple down on it and just bury you. There's people you don't call when you have good news, because they're going to go, nah, it's not really great news, right? Because you got this, that, and you got to think about that. And you're like, I was feeling so good. Now you made me feel bad. So you've got to really understand like who your friends are, what area they fit into. And that's not what this conversation is necessarily about, but it would be good for our listeners to take an inventory of, you know, their friend groups and what they mean. You know, you said, how do we have these relationships? What are the goals of those relationships? How do we decipher like who we hang out with, all that? I think you've got to really ask yourself, like, what does this person need from me? What do I need from them? And hopefully, if they you know, hopefully your non-Christian friends are going, well, they certainly need Jesus. They need me to be the example. Okay. Well, then how are you going to be the example? If anything, it should cause you to like step up your game a little bit. One of the things that I know we do at my church is we ask people, who's somebody close to you but far from God? And we want you to always have an answer for that. Who's somebody close to you but far from God? The reason it's important to have an answer like that is because who are you believing for to show up and accept Christ on a Sunday morning? And then during the week, who are you praying for to accept Christ? If you aren't like really in all empathy, praying and thinking and believing for someone to accept Christ, then like, what is your hope in? Just selfish things?
Right.
You know, like, what is your hope in? That God's going to give you this job, that God's going to one day make this certain amount of money, that God's going to give you a spouse. Well, look, those are all good things. Pray for those things. We love that. That's awesome. But they're also very you-centered.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything in the gospel that's supposed to be me-centered, me-focused. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to receive grace, receive Jesus, receive that relationship, receive that gift, and then I'm supposed to give that gift. I'm supposed to show that to others. I'm supposed to present that to others. So who's somebody close to you but far from God? And right now, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I don't know that I have anybody, you need to find somebody.
Yeah.
It needs to be a big priority, like really big priority, because you know, what good is it for you to go to church on Sunday, but then you walk into your workplace and nobody knows anything? Like, nobody knows that you're a Christian. Nobody knows that you're different. What good is it to walk into the gym and nobody knows you're different? What good is it to walk into your home and your family not know that you're different? Like, don't you want to show your spouse? Don't you want to show your kids? Don't you want to show your neighbors? Don't you want to show everyone that you're growing, that you're progressing? Like, don't you want to show them that there's something different about you? Don't you want somebody one day to come up to you and just be like, hey, dude, you got to help me here. Like, you're, something's different. What's going on? Yeah, it's Jesus. It's Jesus. Yeah. So I challenge our listeners, like, who's somebody close to you but far from God? Because if you can't answer that question, that's really got to be a priority. If you can answer that question and you're like, oh, it's John, or oh, it's this guy, or oh, it's this girl. Okay. How are you affecting that relationship? What are you doing to bring Jesus into that relationship, to bring hope into that relationship? And, you know, one of the things that we just got done talking about on another episode was the difference in anxiety levels. How wonderful in a world full of anxiety, in a world full of lies, in a world full of, you know, trends and TikTok dances, how wonderful is it for you to be the calm one on the sidelines? Like, how wonderful is it for you to be like, oh yeah, no, I mean, Jesus has got this. Like, how bold would that be if you were the only one not screaming, shouting, and throwing a tantrum over who our political candidates are? Like, that's how people experience the peace of Jesus, because they're going, man, that guy's got peace. I don't know how he has peace in a world like this. I got to find out how to get that. And you go, oh, it ain't me, man. It's Jesus.
Yeah. And what I do in response time when we have a call for salvation, whenever there's nobody that comes up, I always remind people, or I try to remind people, all right, you know what this means? It means you sitting here, you have work to do. Like, there's somebody you know that I don't know. There's somebody you know that the other pastors don't know that you have influence over. And so you need to be Jesus to them, because they're not showing up here or anywhere. And so that's just like, yeah, it's sobering to think that, you know, oftentimes we're just like, oh, I tried, you know, well, maybe it's going to be on the 10th time, the 100th time, you know, maybe it won't just be you telling them over and over. Maybe it's going to be you praying for them. Like, how fervently do we pray for the unbeliever in our life? Is it just throwing it up once in a while? Or do you wake up early, getting on your knees before God and putting them before him? Day after day. I mean, that's what you hear stories of, just moms and grandmas that don't give up on their kids. And I've heard so many stories of, they're like, I came back because of this person praying for me.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's that fervent prayer that will change people's hearts. And there's two verses I want to point out that often get misquoted when it comes to friendship. The first one is 1 Corinthians 9:22. Paul says, to the weak I become weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, and that by all means I might save some. I do it for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. This verse gets misquoted when we befriend the unbeliever, is that, oh, I drink because I have to be all things to all people. I went to the strip club because I had to be all things to all people. And what it does, it just justifies the sin that we want to partake in. It has nothing to do with the other person. We're just justifying it in order to seem holier than we are. Mm-hmm. And that verse is not meant to justify sin. It means that you will put yourself in uncomfortable positions in order to reach others, and you will serve. You will give of your time to people that need help and your support. It does not talk anything that Paul's sinning here in order to reach others. The other verse that gets misquoted is 1 Corinthians 5:11. It's the verse where, have nothing to do with the sexually immoral or greedy. Do not even eat with such people. And people misquote this verse. Well, I can't hang out with a sinner because I'm not supposed to eat with them. I'm not supposed to have them in my house. Well, let's read 1 Corinthians 5:11 fully. But now I'm writing to you that you must not associate with anyone who claims to be a brother or sister, but is sexually immoral, greedy, an idolater, slanderer, drunkard, or swindler. Do not even eat with such people. So the caveat to that is someone who claims to be a brother and sister who is a hypocrite.
Right.
They should be judged by the church. They should be called out by the elders. They should be excommunicado until they can come back and hand it over to right. Satan, Paul says in another verse. That should be something that we should judge within the church, and something that is honestly rarely done. We overlook the sin that's in our church until it festers and gets to a point where, like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It's, well, you didn't call it out when you had the chance.
Right.
So that does not mean that we do not associate with unbelievers. It actually means the opposite. It means that we have high standards for ourselves. We're trying to spur each other on to good works and to righteousness in Christ.
Right.
But Paul, what another verse Paul says, like, to avoid such people, I'd have to get out of the world. Right? I'd have to leave the world completely to avoid sinful people. And so, yeah, we're not going to avoid sinners, and nor should we try, but that doesn't mean we have to look like their sin.
Yeah, and, you know, there's several things that come to mind as you're reading that. So one is, you know, we both just got done listening to a podcast where a guy talked about grieving for someone. And, you know, when you were talking about, like, a mom or a grandparent, like, praying for their kid, praying for their grandkid and coming back, that's very much the posture. And I remember walking into my mom's office one time, and there were all these sticky notes up on her wall, and they just had names. And I found my name. My name was on there. My brother's name was on there. Bryn's name was on there. My kids' names were on there. And I was like, what is this? I was like, you just trying to make sure you don't forget anybody's name on something? She was like, no, every day I come in, I sit down in my chair, I look at my wall, and I pray for everybody on that wall. I'm like, dang, Mom. Like, I see you. I see you. That's real. That's real right there. I wonder how many listeners are on your wall. I wonder how many of them are non-believers. When was the last time you grieved? I mean, legitimately, when was the last time you had your body ache over someone not knowing Jesus?
Yep.
It's a really tough thing to do. And it's a really hard position to put yourself in. So that's one of the things that, you know, you chatting through that made me think of. The other thing's kind of more of a funnier story, I hope. There's this pastor buddy of mine. He started up a church, and they meet in a bar. And when I say pastor buddy of mine, like, I whatever. You can take that for whatever you want. But they meet in a bar, and I was talking to him about how his church was going, and he made a comment that, you know, most people come because they can't believe we're meeting in a bar, and that so many people show up because they're like, you know, I wouldn't come to any other church, but this church is in a bar, you know, and da 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 da. And he was like super proud of that, like just super, super, super proud of that.
And communion's off the hook.
Communion's amazing, I'm sure. And then he just threw out this thing of like, yeah, you know, Jesus, man, you know, Jesus sat with sinners and Jesus welcomed sinners. And then he threw in this, like, Jesus went to sinful places and reached out to sinners. And I was like, he did? He went to sinful places? And so I wasn't like, I just thought it was an interesting approach. And it's part of just this Christianese we get into where people take little pieces of scripture and, you know, they say things like, well, don't judge others. We're not supposed to judge. And it's like, or you shall be judged in the same way you judge others.
Yep.
So when I say you shouldn't, you know, dress provocatively, judge me in the same way. Like, feel free. But we get that scripture messed up. And then we think, oh, well, Jesus hung out with sinners. So, you know, I'm going to the strip club to, you know, minister to people. It's like, that's not a good place to minister to people.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be doing that. So we got to make sure we understand how to do this appropriately. And the best way to just kind of do that and start is like, hey, who's somebody I know that's close to me, but far from God? How can I impact their life in a positive way? How can I maybe one day introduce them to Jesus? And then how can I start praying, God, would you allow that opportunity to just arrive? And then would you give me the words to speak? Would you give me the boldness to speak, the courage to speak? It'll happen.
Yeah.
You pray for it, it'll happen. It'll absolutely happen because God will open that door and you will have the words you need. You don't have to be the most eloquent. You don't have to be flawless. You don't have to be perfect. I do this for a living and I'm not the most eloquent and I'm not the most perfect. So you'll have the words you need to say. And then, you know, it's a great position to be in. It really is.
And I think as we are pastors, and if you're in ministry or leading anything in ministry, I think it's definitely hard to have close friends, period, let alone close friends that are unbelievers. And so there is that distinction between, you know, having a close friend, someone who's in your life, who knows all your business, versus someone that you can have coffee with once a month. And I think for us in ministry, it's easier to have that once a month coffee thing. And they can still be friendly, but then I think we just have to distinguish between close friend. And when I look at that too, it's like, you know, I have, you know, there's people that I connect with that I knew from my previous job. And, you know, I also have to look at, like, are you being too heavy-handed? Is it something that they don't want to talk to you because they know they're going to get an earful and you just make them feel worse?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you truly love them for who they are as a person and what they're going through? And in your mind, as you're talking to them, okay, the answer is Jesus. The answer is Jesus. Like, I know that you just need Jesus, right? You can think all those thoughts. But if you're so heavy-handed to the point that it's just like, I mean, think about if you had a friend, right, that, you know, let's say you had a Muslim friend and you're like, every time I talk to this Muslim friend, he just tells me I need to be a Muslim. I know I'm never going to be a Muslim, period.
Right.
But that person would not be my friend because I don't want to hear it. I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Right. And so obviously, regardless of the fact, we know we have the answer, but at the same time, you know, they may not be in a position to hear it and receive it. They may not be ready when you're ready. And so you have to respect that. You also have to make sure that it doesn't mean you never talk about God. I mean, have a whole 45-minute breakfast and then at the very end being like, hey, would love to see a church. When can we get together again, right?
Yep.
You're planting seeds, be led by the Holy Spirit, right? There's not one approach that we can tell you, like, do this with your friend, it will work.
Right.
I wish. Right. You have to be led by the Holy Spirit. Imagine that.
You do. You do, and you have to want it for him, man. You just, I've got like, in all honesty, I've got like three people in my life right now. One of them's really close, like best, almost best friend kind of stuff. I mean, really, honestly and truly. Two kids, plays great with my kids. And I think if you asked his wife, like, do you believe in God? They would say, yes, absolutely. But they're kind of on and off on if they go to church. And as far as like, putting practices into their family, it's really difficult. At the same time, man, like, they didn't have it modeled for them. Like, look, we just got to be really careful with the standards we hold to people because we don't know their background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in a family where I never saw my parents take a sip of alcohol. I never heard my parents cuss. I never, like, they were the most generous, loving, amazing, supportive people. And dude, like, we loved going to church and we loved Jesus. If I didn't grow up in that household, I have no idea how I would have turned out. And that just makes me so grateful, so thankful. And it honestly, it's very humbling because now I'm trying to create the same kind of atmosphere in my house. And man, it is tough. It is really hard. And, you know, I've got this guy in my friend circle. He didn't have any of that, you know, parents divorced, wife, parents divorced. And now they're trying to create this wonderful marriage for kids. And they're so great at being parents and being friends. But man, I want them to know Jesus at the level that I know Jesus. I want them to experience Jesus at the level I want that I've experienced Jesus. I want them to see it. I want them to get it. I want their kids to get it. And they're so close. I mean, they are just, oh my gosh, they are so freaking close, man. They're so close.
Yeah.
And you just got to want it for them and you got to pray for them and you just got to believe it's going to happen. So, you know, listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you're convicted right now for two things, one, that you don't have a friend that's a non-Christian, or two, that you don't want it for them, and you got to shift both of those things. You got to be in a position to share the gospel with somebody who doesn't know it. And you really need to start praying. You really need to start praying to have a heart for them. I mean, really, just to have an empathetic heart for them. Stop praying for all the things you need. Pray for somebody else's salvation. Pray for somebody else's needs and somebody else's heart. At the end of the day, you know Jesus. Not a lot else matters. I mean, just real talk, not a lot else matters.
Yeah.
But if somebody doesn't know Jesus, and if somebody else doesn't know Jesus, that's the only thing that matters. And look, the Bible tells us that people are saved by our faith. Like, you can save someone by your faith alone. You can intercede on someone's behalf. You can be that prayerful mom, that prayerful dad, that prayerful friend. Like, it's an important thing. And so I want that for my friend. I want that for our listeners. And if right now you ask yourself the question, you know, if you're like, oh, I don't have anybody close to me, anybody far from, and honestly, I don't even know where to start, then pray about it. Like, all of this goes back to your relationship with Christ. All of it goes back to prayer. All of it goes back to the Great Commission. I mean, I hate to say that it's the most foundational and basic thing, but there's a reason that Jesus commanded this. It's because it is the essence of everything. And so hopefully our listeners listen to this today and they're like, hey, yeah, I got to get on this. I got to make this a priority, because I do think it'll bless you. It'll give you a different perspective. And especially, we're going to be releasing this episode leading up to Easter. It's one of the greatest times that you can invite someone to church. It's one of the greatest times that people are most open to receiving the gospel.
That's right.
Let's be about it, Christians. Let's go out there and let's make this happen.
Yeah. And if you're listening to and you have unbelieving friends that are rubbing off on you, this is a check for you to be holy before God. And if there's activities you're doing with certain friends you know you shouldn't be doing, you're not reaching them by doing those activities. They're reaching you. They're evangelizing to you on their worldview. And so just take that before God. If that means you have to step away with some friends in the moment, do it so that you can then come back and then be that light to them. And so I think as we wrap up here, this is just an important thing that we all have to do, is that there's somebody that you can reach that we can't. There's somebody that God's called you to. And so take it seriously. Every time you meet with them, go before it in prayer. I mean, we've said this multiple times. Prayer is the key ingredient in all of this. And so that's how we leave you. Cool. So till next time, go with God, grow in discernment, keep your eyes on Jesus.
Thanks for joining us on the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim. Don't forget to hit subscribe. If this episode blessed you, please share it with a friend. Check out the show notes for more ways to connect with the hosts of the show.